boy, we are live, peoples. Welcome to the Amazing Action Comics Podcast, where we are all about independent comics. I'm one of your hosts, Angel, with Phil Pepe.
How's it going, Angel?
Ooh, that's going good, brother. Well, we were just talking offline for a second that it is opening day of baseball. I didn't want to go down a rabbit hole, but I can't get it off my head. Yes, if I want to go to sleep and I want to go into deep sleep, I watch baseball. I played baseball in Little League when I was young, so I have nothing against it. It's just like the worst sport to watch. And I was trying to think, I was like, is there another sport that doesn't have like unlimited timeouts? Like you could just, there's no clock in baseball, but no timeouts either. There's just unlimited, just step off the plate and be there for like a half an hour.
Yeah, you could just vamp for as long as you want.
I'm so glad I'm coming up with the new rules, but it's all good. All right. Welcome, guys, to a special episode of the Indie Creator Spotlight. We got ourselves a guest today, Michael Gonzalez of Rainy Road Media, who has a new project that we're going to be discussing. So, you know what? I think let's dive into it. Let's bring him onto the podcast and just get this thing rocking and rolling. At two, and there he goes.
What's up, fellas?
What's going on, Michael?
Not much. How you guys doing?
We're doing good.
You know what? We're doing good. I'm going to try to behave, because if you've ever listened to this podcast before, we often go off on tangents. I think there was one episode where we went off on a tangent that had a tangent within another tangent. Okay, yeah. So that was like a tangent Inception. To the third power. Yes, exactly. And we were just trying to claw our way out of this whole mess of what we got ourselves into. So I'm going to try to keep myself focused on this. So Michael, how's everything going?
It's all right. Everything's going along. We're, getting excited, trying to get this Kickstarter ready, and hopefully things will, be good when it launches.
All right. Awesome. Yeah. So we do want to talk about your project, but let's just go back a little bit so people can get to know you again, because we had you on the podcast before, and I think we spoke on the book 8-6. Is that what it's right?
Well, when I came on last year, it was trying to promote, a book called Gun Engine Zero.
Right.
It was this was like the first project where I didn't have it completed ahead of time. So I needed to, try to secure like a great deal of funds, and it failed. But I also have several books that I've done before, and that 6-8 was one right. that you guys looked at and reviewed, and I appreciate you guys doing that. So I've had other books that have been printed, but now I'm trying to do the second issue of this horror anthology called Epic of Darkness.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Yeah, I remember the 6-8 book. I remember Phil and I really liking that book. It had such a stylistic look to it, and it was just really well written, from what I remember. But just going over Gun Engine Zero, so. We've done Kickstarters as well that failed, and every time something either, we look at accomplishments as being, the top tier, and then we look at, failures that happen, but oftentimes we walk away with something learned from it. And, we've had times where we had to, go back, redo a campaign on the same book and address it a different way because we learned something from the first time. Did you walk away learning anything from Gun Engine Zero?
Yeah, well, one thing I learned is that I don't have enough followers to support like a higher budget kind of a thing, at least not at that time. That's what I'm trying to do now, is try to rectify that, get more people in. The other thing I learned is it's probably the best way to get new backers is through cross-promotion with other Kickstarter campaigns, because that was far and away brought the most people in. Whenever I would, ask somebody else running a campaign if they could share my campaign. And once they would do that, then there would be a whole big influx of new backers, or at least people that are following the campaign. So that, I think, was probably like my biggest takeaway, is how important that is to try to get with other campaigns and cross-promote.
Mm. That's interesting. Yeah, we've done that as well. And yeah, there definitely is there's a community out there that will be supportive as well. And then you have the ones that kind of just are dismissive about the whole thing. But I think there's more people willing to help and spread the word, because it helps them as well, because we're just piggybacking off of that. So just tell us a little bit about again, just how you got into this, what you are in this whole role, because I know that there's multiple aspects to each book. There's a writer, there's the artist. What's your role in it? And then I guess we can hop right into what this next, you know, Kickstarter project that you have coming up.
Sure. Yeah, so I'm just a creator, writer. I do lettering as well, and like the graphic design of the books, you know, once to get everything together and put it all together. So I'm just, what was the first part of your question? I forgot.
Just give us a little bit of background. So the books that you've written, how long you've been doing this.
Yeah, so I've been, like we talked about last time, is like I tried to get into comics when I was very young, and then just kept trying at different points in time, like after I graduated high school, then kind of gave it up and went to try to get to film and video. And then I had moved to China. I was living in China, and then I started up again. I figured like one more last try to try to get into the comic industry. And that was like 2013. So it's been like about 10 years now doing things. So like the first book I did was the book we were just talking about. This is a 6-8. This is a like a supernatural horror comic. Mm-hmm. That was the first one I did. I'll show it.
Yep. And remember that cover.
Yeah. That's with Alan Byrne. And Burns is an S at the end. So I did that book. It was really meant to be just like a calling card sort of a story, you know, just like a one-off thing. But I do want to continue that if I get the chance. And then after that, we did this Neotheric. This is a graphic novel. I did the first 4 issues, but they only came out digitally. And then after I finished those, I took some of my tax return money and printed out a graphic novel. And I'm hoping to do issue number 5 of that this summer. So I already got some new artists to work on that. And I'll be given with this campaign, I'll be giving away this Ashcan, which has some of the artwork that they've done in preparation for that. But that one's just I can only afford to like have them do a first, you know, some artwork. So I'll need to, you know, raise a lot more to actually get the book done for that one. So then after I did that, I started working on short stories, writing short stories and stuff. I came up with a bunch of them, and eventually I put it into this book. It's called Book of Legend. This book is kind of like it's more like a general audience sort of hero's journey sort of anthology. But some of the stories that I came up with, the short stories, were horror stories. They were more adult in nature. So I couldn't put them in this book with these other. So I held on to those. And then when it came around like last year, I was thinking, what can I do with them? And so I thought, okay, well, I can do like a sister book to this, but it'll be an adult horror anthology. And I take those 2 stories that were already done, come up with a couple more. And that's when I have this. This is Epic of Darkness. Mm-hmm. This is the first issue. And so this one has 6 stories in it. It is 48 pages. So, and then when I was doing that one, originally I had to break up one of the stories because it was just too big to be a saddle stitched book. It would have had to be perfect bound if I wanted to include the whole story. So I broke it up and to have it in the second issue. And so I had some more, you know, artwork and things that were already done so that I could do the second issue. So I went ahead and just, you know, I've again self-funded for the artwork and everything for issue 2. So when issue 2 comes out, I mean, when the Kickstarter launches, the book will be ready to go and everything is done. So there's no, no fear that it won't be fulfilled or anything like that.
And then there's less waiting on top of that.
Yeah.
Which is good because you just have to go to press. So I know that it's really difficult because, you know, we still struggle with it as well, being a small press publisher, in regards to capital. Capital is always the biggest thing because you're self-funded. So you're doing the writing. You save costs because you can do the lettering and some of the production design and the back end stuff, but you still have to pay your artists. So out of everything that you're doing right now, what do you find the most challenging when you're coming together with these projects? And then do you sit down and put a budget plan together? Like, it's going to cost X amount per page. At the very end, this is what it's going to ultimately cost me. This is what I need to raise on a crowdfunding campaign to get this done, printed, and then possibly fund the next issue. Is that something that's on your mind, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely be the ultimate goal, is, you know, to, yeah, I mean, I know in general how much it costs. I didn't actually sit down and do line item, you know, about everything that it costs, but I know in general it costs like between $3,000 or $4,000 to do one single comic book, and that's just paying the artist. That's it. I'm not paying myself or anything else, because I do the lettering and everything else. But just to pay the artist to do it is like about four grand, you know, because that's, I know about like what I can afford to pay different artists to do the pages. And it's, you know, it hovers around like $100. So if a book is like, you know, 28 pages, then, you know, it's $2,800. Or if it's, you know, like 40 pages, it's $4,000. So it's at this point, like with the artists I work with and what I've done before, that's the general range. So I know really like how much it actually costs me to make a book. But at this point, like I was saying with Gun Engine Zero, when it failed, because I didn't self-fund it. So I only paid the guys to do six pages to, you know, show a sample of what it would look like. I couldn't afford to pay them four grand, you know, to get the book done first ahead of time. So, but like I said, for these other ones, I had a lot of stuff already done. So it's, you know, like sunk cost kind of stuff. It's like, I've already spent the money. So I might as well just get out of it whatever I can get out of it. And when I did these books, really all I was looking for was just to get enough money to do a small print run. And so I didn't have to spend any additional money to do that. And so that's was really just my goal, is trying to get enough money to do a small print run and hopefully bring more fans into it, so that in the future, if I do the next one, there'll be more people that maybe then I can, you know, reach an actual goal where it would, you know, at least pay for itself. So that's kind of the goal that I'm, you know, striving for with each one, is, you know, just trying to get more people in, trying to get more backers, trying to get a little bit more money, and eventually get to the point where at least it breaks even.
Right. And that's the American dream, to break even, right? All right. Phil, do you have any questions before I ask him to start talking about the book?
I remember last time you had a great sort of reason for the name of Rainy Road. So just for folks who missed it, or just to refresh my memory, why Rainy Road Media? What was the reason behind that name?
Well, one thing is because my grandparents lived on this road. Their house is called Rainy Road. It wasn't spelled Rainy Road. It was a different spelling, but that's how you pronounce it. And since I was a military brat, you know, an army brat, that was kind of like what I considered my home, even though, you know, it was like my grandparents, because we'd go back there every summer and stuff like that. So I have like that connection to that. And then also, because when I was thinking about what am I going to call this, you know, just the idea of like you're a rainy road, you're like you're on a road, it's sort of like evocative of this idea that you're kind of like by yourself on your own, kind of like striving for something. So, you know, facing the obstacles and all this kind of other things, but you just got to keep, you know, keep on keeping on, you know? So that's kind of like, that's why I just picked it.
Cool. No, that's cool.
No, I like that.
I also wanted to know, you know, aside from Kickstarter, do you go to shows? Do you bring your samples to shows? Do you try and network there and try and, you know, get the buzz out at local shows, or do you even do, you know, bigger shows too?
Well, I did last year. That was my first year where I thought I had enough books and stuff, you know, where I could actually go to conventions. And it's something I did want to do from, you know, a long time ago, is to go to conventions. So last year I went to like about 10 conventions. just to see, you know, how it would go. And I tried doing that too, like, you know, with Gun Engine Zero, I also had like an ash can, and I would give out the ash can to people that would come there. And I had, you know, art pieces from that book, you know, try to get people, you know, interested in it and stuff like that. But that doing conventions, this is like a whole nother
it's a whole nother road to go down. It's a whole nother hustle. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's just like so much from that. It's like trying to figure out, because I would just basically because I got family that lives down in Florida. So I went down to one last summer when my kids were on break. We kind of made a vacation out of it. We went down to Florida, and I just picked one there, and it turned out to be horrible. It was just inside of a hotel. Yeah. There's a small room. They were charging everybody, even kids, $20 just to get in. And I didn't know that ahead of time. It's like, that's the other thing. It's like I learned, like, okay, you need to find out ahead of time, like, what are the organizers going to charge people just to get into the show? Because mm-hmm. if they're charging them that much, how much money are they going to have once they get in the door to spend on your stuff?
Yeah.
So that was one thing. I went out to Nashville for a show there, because that's kind of like the closest big city to me. And then I just did a bunch of like shows around this area. And so a lot of them were not very good, you know, just didn't sell. But some of them I did pretty good. You know, at least we broke even and made a little bit extra from the show. But it's just really weird. It's like it's real unpredictable about what's going to happen and what kind of audience is there. And this year I don't plan on doing other than this, the one local show here. And then there's one just at the next town over. I'll probably only do two shows this year, because like the economies are like really bad. So I didn't want to, you know, keep spending too much money on it.
Yeah. Shows are, they can be quite unpredictable. You got to do a ton of research, especially when it comes to like local shows, because most local shows, especially around here, they're not artist centered. They're mostly like back issue bin collectors. They're going to go for, you know, the big two stuff. And it's not really, I don't want to say it's not independent friendly, because they just bring everybody in, but it's not independent focused. Mm-hmm. So I know there's more and more shows that are starting to pop up that actually promote more of the independent scene rather than mainstream media. And those are the ones that you really got to try to hit, because those are a different group and a dynamic. Other than trying to do like the big repop conventions, like I know Florida has their SuperCon. We have a bunch here up on the Northeast that happen, including New York Comic Con. You got Chicago C2E2. I mean, but you're talking about, you know, $650 for a table, which is crazy. Yeah. But, you know, you're also talking about thousands of people as far as traffic. So, you know, you have to outweigh, even if you don't make your money back, but you collect 1,000 emails or 2,000 emails, and those are people that you can email out, hopefully in the future, that will help, you know, build it up. The first step is trying to get into those shows. I mean, there's like secondary ones too, like Baltimore Comic Con. There's a bunch out there. But, you know, if you stick to the local ones only that aren't, you know, indie-centric, then it becomes difficult trying to promote yourself, because you got guys that are coming in that are probably what, in their mid-40s, 50s, that want to get issues of when they were children, which is Spider-Man, Silver Age stuff, Golden Age stuff, that they're looking for, which, and then we're sitting there for 8 hours. Either if I'm an artist and I'm just drawing for 8 hours, if you're a writer, you're trying to make connections and you know, people that are just passing by. And it's funny, because as many shows that I've done, the guys that come over to the table are great, because they'll talk to you. But for the most part, people that are not there for other than what they're looking for in regards to, you know, mainstream stuff, will walk by the table. They won't even make eye contact at all. It's just crazy. But yeah,
I mean, they just walk by like this.
Yeah. You look at body posture. You look at everything. Yeah, trying to get them to connect, come in.
If I lock eyes and I have to give you money, and I can't give you money because I paid $20 to get it, you know. I mean, but to your point, Angel, there are definitely more indie focused shows popping up. You know, MoCA, Museum of Comic Art in the city, has been around for a while now. I believe they're still going on. That's a great, you know, I would say that that's the upper tier of like indie, you know, shows like that. Brooklyn Comic Fest, I think, is another mm-hmm. one that's all independent creators in Brooklyn. So it's great to see that. And I think it's, you talked earlier about community and partnering up and networking. And I feel that as more of those indie shows pop up, you know, more of an opportunity for creators to network with each other and, you know, come up with maybe with a game plan together, but also you have people who are coming specifically to see indie creators, whether they be veteran indie creators or looking for that new thing to discover, which again is where you sit, Mike, with what you've been doing. Again, you know, and I guess we could get into the book Epic yeah. Darkness, because there's a lot of great discovery in there, I felt.
Yeah, well, and it's the book itself is the end product of what you're trying to accomplish, right? So the book can get created. And this is a constant conversation that I have with a lot of independent creators, is they're focused on the book itself, which is good because the book needs to be completed. And I think the completion of the book, of whether it's a series, whether you're, you know, 3 issues ahead, 5 issues ahead, or if it's just a one shot, whatever it is understanding what the plan is with the book. When is it finished? How do we need to finish? How many issues? Yada, yada. Then there's the business aspect of it. All right, what's the overall cost that it's going to take to make this book come to, you know, fruition? Then on top of that, most people don't do this. Most creators don't do this. How do I market the book? How much money mm-hmm. do I have for that? And marketing part is, okay, how many conventions am I going to do this year? How much money do I have to put aside for tables at conventions? How much do I have to put aside for mailing? How much do I have to put aside for stationery supplies? Because all that stuff adds up. And then you look at your credit card bill, and you're like, holy shit, where did all this money go? And you know, as long as I've been doing this, we've been in sort of like, we've never been in the black. We've always been in the red, which means we're losing money. And I try to stay within a certain percentage of that red. So that way, when it comes to tax season, which nobody ever talks about either, you're writing everything off and you're showing a loss. And you need to, because you don't want to pay. If you have a successful campaign of, you know, say $4,000, but it cost you $4,300, you shouldn't have to pay taxes on the $4,000 that you raised. But you need to be able to show, as an independent, where all that money went. So that's why all these line items that most people don't care about, because most creators just want to do one thing, and that's just create. But if you got something that's created, nobody's buying because you can't get out there to promote it. It becomes this like conundrum of a frustrating circle. Dude, I've got this, but nobody wants to buy it. Have you gone out to see people? No. Why? Because I can't. I'm creating. And it's a vicious circle. And, you know, as many times as I have the conversation, it gets quite frustrating and vexing, because most people who want, you know, that don't have the followers, that's the number one thing, is right. How do we gain more and more followers? And with social media, it's tending to become easier. But it's just constant content, right? Constant. It's more work sometimes doing the whole social media thing than it is to actually work on your book. I find it to be work myself. I'm like, oh my God, I got to do another post today. All right, I got to do another post today. All right, we got to do another podcast here. And so, but that's an important aspect of always staying out front, so that in this day and age, when people have so many options, so many YouTube channels to go to, so many TikTok channels to go to, plus the shows on top of that, if we're not consistent in our, you know, not content creation for social media, we lose them. We lose them. It's crazy. It's crazy out there. But all right, that's my lecture. I'm moving on. But yeah, hopefully. I mean, because I've spoken to a lot of people who are, you know, really successful. And it's a constant struggle to stay ahead of the game and stay in people's radar than it is to, you know, create content. Because everybody has great ideas. And a lot of people execute them really well. But when it comes to the business aspect of it, they're like, they're completely lost. And I wish there was a resource for independent creators, like a centralized resource. You know, there's a whole bunch of Facebook pages, and it's just people giving their opinion, but there isn't a central resource for how to like manage the business aspect of independent comics so that we can create success. And guess who's not doing it? Because so we're not even going to go there. All right. But Michael, let's get into your book. So talk to us a little bit about this Epic of Darkness, because you already had an issue one come out. Yes. So now you got your Kickstarter getting ready to launch mid-April. You have April 13th set as a date, hopefully, to launch. So, yeah, talk to the audience a little bit about what Epic of Darkness is.
Okay, yeah, so it's a an adult horror anthology. It's very adult. So if anybody's kind of squeamish on that, just be warned. And so the idea that I had with this is that I'm started trying to emulate, 2000 AD. I don't know if you guys know, it's that's where Judge Dredd started off, and he's like, obviously their most famous character. So a lot of times they'll have a judge, he's their main feature. So they'll have a Judge Dredd story, and then they'll have just random other stories with it. And that's kind of like what I'm trying to do with this, is that character there that you see on the screen, that for now I call her Lady X, but that's not her real name. In the second issue, you'll find out what her name is, or at least what people call her. And there's a whole story behind that'll come out. So she's like the feature of the story, and it's a ser her adventures are all serialized. Well, most of them will be, like this first one will be serialized over, this one is going to be over like the first four issues, I believe. Then there's another main character whose name is Grave, and he's kind of like a World of Warcraft Conan type of situation. His story is serialized, but then there's other things that will be self-contained stories, and it's in color and in black and white. It's just a mix of, a hodgepodge kind of thing. The general theme of these stories, or which I kind of discovered on the way of like writing them, was is basically sort of like the where humanity is heading, like this sort of like the downfall of mankind. So if anybody's watched like Black Mirror, there's sort of like a similar, I guess, kind of a vibe to it. That's the general theme that runs through like all of the stories. But I had just like a whole bunch of ideas for horror stories, and I don't know why, because I really, a while back, I never, before I did the 6-8, I never really even thought about doing horror. So it's kind of weird that it's just, come up like that. But I had a whole bunch of different ideas for, stories. Like some are very short, like maybe a couple pages, and some are, like expansive sort of adventures. And instead of me trying to figure out how can I do each one of these in their own comic book, I figured, okay, well, why don't I just do another anthology? And that way I can put whatever ideas I have into that book, fit them in whenever I can and do like that. So,
Nice. So now all the stories are written by you, correct?
yes.
But you have different artists working on different stories?
Yeah, I try to find the artists that match the tone and like the feel of the story. Just like, with 6-8, obviously that was a big part of that story, was the artist, the way that he, his style really fit the sort of the atmosphere of that story. So I really concentrate on trying to find artists whose style matches whatever the story is, because some stories are kind of like dark humor, like the dark fantasy. Some of the, like this girl story is kind of like a dystopian sci-fi kind of like a story like that. So yeah, so I searched through Facebook and different things trying to find artists that'll match, and whoever's I can afford and whoever's available wants to do it, then I'll try to work with them and give some variety to the book.
Cool. I mean, you gave us a preview copy, which was pretty cool. I like to actually read the whole thing because I was really intrigued. And then the art styles are so different, and I love the different takes on the artist. Like I haven't seen Zipitone in forever, and I saw this one story had a bunch of Zipitone in it. Just looked beautiful. It was black and white and stuff.
Yeah, that's a great story.
It's pretty cool. So yeah, that's exciting. So all right. So what's your plan then with this? Is how, do you have an end issue number, or is this an ongoing anthology series for yourself?
No, I'm hoping this will just be ongoing, because this is something that's a little bit different for me. Usually, like with the Neotheric book, for example, before I even started like doing the first issue, putting it out, I had already basically planned out the entire series, and it would be like a 50 or 60 issue series. So I already know exactly how that story's going to end. And that's usually what I do. I like to plan things out as much as I can into the future, so that I can set things up, early on, and then have those come, you know, pay them off later on. But with this one, I intentionally wanted to not do that. I wanted to just sort of like let it things come to me. You know, I have an idea, maybe one or two issues ahead, like what the stories are going to be, or like this, that girl, like what her story is going to be. But I'm intentionally not really like plotting out super fine details about everything ahead of time. Because just now, like doing these first two issues, there's a lot of stuff that's come to me that I did not originally plan on in the very beginning, and that I've been able to kind of, you know, sort of like find my way through it. And it's a lot of interesting stuff has come up that hopefully we can get to and show and people can experience. But yeah, it's a little bit, I'm sort of like rolling the dice and seeing kind of what happens. But yeah, it is supposed to be an ongoing series, and hopefully we can just keep going, because I've got tons and tons of ideas and things, short stories and her story and the other stories about how we can keep going with it.
Yeah, that's the creative process, right? So yeah. Are all the stories within the anthology multiples, or some of them like one shots?
No, yeah, some of them are standalone stories. So I try to make it like a mix, you know, like an even split, like the couple, if there's like this one, there's four stories, two of them will be the self-contained standalone stories. And like two of them will be the serialized stories that with like with that girl and that Grave character. So I know if I had them all like serialized stories, people would kind of be pissed off. It's like, there's not one complete story in this damn book, you know? Yeah. So I try to mix them up, yeah.
And where's the page count right now?
This book will be 36 pages.
Okay, so that's hefty. Yeah. That's no ads. That's just all stories, right?
Yeah, it's just all stories straight through. The first book was 48 pages. There was a couple of pages at the back where I had some like notes and stuff about the stories and stuff, but. With like the actual stories was like 46 pages, but nice. But the first one is more expensive. You know, I charge like $12 for that book, but this second issue only charged like about $8 for the book. So,
okay, you know, and so will the first issue be available for them as well?
Yeah, I overprinted on the first issue so that hopefully, you know, if we get to second issue, third issue, fourth issue, whatever, I'll still have some available. Mm-hmm. So if people that are brand new to it can, you know, get the, because I know if people come into the second issue and it's like, well, I can't get the first issue, then why would I get the second issue?
Right.
So
So
I printed enough, so hopefully we should have enough.
Sounds good. I'm definitely interested, so we'll definitely be on that backing wall for you there.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Wow. Yeah, it's great stuff, Michael. You have a great, unique creative voice. You know, some of these stories in Epic of Darkness really kind of do latch on to the fear of the things that are in the zeitgeist right now, which you had kind of talked about earlier, like the how bad things can get, you know, which I really responded to. I thought was really good. And I think it is. It's a great companion to like Book of Legend, which is, you know, another anthology, but completely different, you know, more in that superhero genre. And again, your artistic choices, I think, match the stories really well. So, yeah, you got a great creative voice. Keep at it. And for someone who's not a big horror guy, I mean, between 6'8 and Epic of Darkness, you got that in your blood, you know?
Yeah. I must have had a blood transfusion or something. I swear I never thought of doing horror. All the time that I thought about writing stuff, it was always like superhero, sci-fi, you know, action adventure kind of stuff. I never really considered horror. I was never really even into horror. You know, this is in the 80s, you know, it's like Freddy Krueger and Friday the 13th were real big. You know, I watched some of them and stuff. It's just like, whatever. I was never really into it. It's just, it's a kind of weird thing, you know. You never know where life is going to take you.
Yeah, for sure. All right, cool. Well, listen, any final words that you want anybody to know? Because we're going to have all your information below in the video where they can go to find you on the Kickstarter. Because right now you have sort of a preview page, right?
So I sent you I have there's two links. The one is the it's like a rough draft
Right, which is not what I'm going to send. I'm going to send the other one, which is the, okay. the follow page yeah, for anybody so, who wants to follow you.
Yeah, so the follow page has that. If you wanted to send the rough draft, that would be fine too, because people could see the preview is in there. So even in the rough draft of the Kickstarter page, I have the image of the two covers and where you can click on it, and it'll take you to the previews of both issues.
Cool.
So if people wanted to see the previews, then you can go to it like that. So you can't back anything right now, but at least you could see everything that's going to be available in the campaign and how much it's going to be and all that kind of stuff.
Nice. All right. So, and then we're looking at probably April 13-ish. When you're going
to
launch?
I'm hoping to. I don't want to launch it until I have everything in my hand. And there's like two pages of art that I'm still waiting on. Okay. He's already shown me the pencils. So hopefully, and this is going to be in black and white. So there's no coloring that I have to wait for. So hopefully that'll be, it's got still two more weeks. So I would imagine that I should have that soon. So that, and that's it. That's the last little piece of the puzzle that needs to be in. So I'm hoping for 13 that we'll be able to launch.
Nice. Cool. All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. So we're looking at probably April 13th. We're wishing Michael the best. Make sure you take a look at the links below the video, because it'll take you right to that Kickstarter page and then show some indie love and support for Michael and his project. Michael, listen, we want to thank you for having you on again, bro. We wish you all the best with this project. And as soon as it launches, we'll definitely be there to help you out.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right. Our pleasure. All right. Take it easy for now, guys. Again, take a look at the links below, and then we'll have Michael on, I guess, you know, when it launches again, to kind of just get you into the mix and see where you are. And hopefully sure. we can, you know, raise a glass or two for a successful campaign. So yeah. Until next time, guys, please be amazing, stay amazing, and read something amazing.